convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western and Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of S. Douglas Woodward. We're going to be talking about his latest book, Black Sun, Blood Moon. Black Sun, Blood Moon, of course, gets into the fact that we're living in prophetic times. Now, a lot of people don't believe that. A lot of people believe that all the things that are taking place today, certainly politically, are simply the evolution of the ideas of the people who are running the world. And we talk about the Brotherhood of Darkness, and there really is a group out there. And of course, if you go into the background of the Trilateral Commission, you look at their logo, and you look very carefully, they see three curved arrows, but if you look very carefully, they're sixes. Six, six, six. And then, of course, they're joined together at the center by an upside-down broken cross, a deviation, a slight change of Nero's cross. But you remember Emperor Nero, who burned Rome down 2,000 years ago, blamed it on the Christians. Why would the Trilateral Commission certainly choose that as an emblem? Why? Because there are powerful spiritual forces behind their effort to bring about a world government under the control of what I believe will be the coming Antichrist, and their effort to destroy Christianity, which of course is their primary goal. Destroy Christianity, you could to destroy the foundation of our country. And you can't understand anything going on today unless you understand the prophetic forces at work. And that's what Doug has really tried to do with this book. It's fascinating as he talks about end times prophecies and certainly how we have to recognize that we truly are living in prophetic times. Doug, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Hey, it's great to be back again with you, Dr. Stan. It has been, it's been several months since we've had a chance to visit.
All right, fine. Well, certainly this is a fascinating book. So why don't you pick up the story? And basically, of course, it gets into the whole idea of certainly who is the Antichrist? Certainly, how do we interpret the unfolding of events today? But you pick up the story.
Sure. Well, I've written about five books. All of them deal with prophetic topics. Black Sun, Blood Moon is actually the middle of the three books that I've written. It's a little bit more of a personal discussion on things that Christians should be doing to keep watch, to sort of be alert, to look at the signs of the times and so forth. And so, in fact, it was Dr. Stan, it was the title I originally wanted. My publisher, Tom Horn, didn't think it was dramatic enough. I was planning to call the book Keeping Watch. He thought we needed something more dramatic, so he proposed Black Sun, Blood Moon, which is a reference to Revelation 6:12. And so that's kind of where that title came from. The two books I've written most recently, Power Quest Book 1, Power Quest Book 2, we've had the chance to talk through quite a lot over the last year, really, but maybe even longer. We've talked, a dozen times or so and covered quite a bit of that. The topic I was wondering if we wanted to talk about tonight was about Dr. Joseph Mengele. And,
all right, fine. Really, well, let's talk about Dr. Mengele because, of course, one of our favorite villains.
He's one of our favorite villains, I think is exactly right. And we've you and I have had a chance to cover maybe seven chapters or so in the book, and this has to do with the last chapter, Power Quest Book 2.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand there really is evil in the world. The Nazis certainly were evil, but what most people don't understand is Mengele escaped to South America, in my estimation, along with many of the Nazis, fully helped by people at the highest level of our government, people who belong to what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. This is not imaginary, it's real. This is the real world.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. the U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulating coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Disaster can strike at any time. That's why Americans spend billions on insurance policies. But what about investing into disaster preparedness supplies, especially food? After Hurricane Sandy, people waited weeks for help to arrive. Be prepared for anything with Mountain House freeze-dried foods, the finest in the industry, packed in heavy-duty double-enameled number 10 cans with over 99% of the oxygen removed for the longest shelf life of any product available. And the taste, absolutely delicious. Entrees, meats, vegetables, fruits, and desserts made in the USA. Just add hot water, wait 10 minutes, and serve. Save 25% on Mountain House No. 10 cans, April 2nd through the 8th, with free shipping to the lower 48 states. Visit freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. 866-404-3663. Get 25% off April 2nd through the 8th. Act today. Don't miss out.
Here, this is South America. Mostly lived in Argentina, Bolivia, Paraguay, and died in Brazil.
Hold that thought, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to be talking about Joseph Mengele. And basically, of course, this part of past history. Well, I mean, that was then, this is now. But really, that's not the case at all. I mean, Joseph Mengele did all sorts of horrible things to the children over there. And in Nazi Germany, carried out all sorts of grotesque experiments. And then, of course, when the war ended, Mengele, along with so many of the other Nazis, were helped to escape to South America. And they were helped by MI6. They were helped by the American intelligence agencies, first the OSS and then the CIA, by a satanic cell within the Vatican. And there was something called the Rat Line, R-A-T. And you can, fortunately, well, you don't have to accept what I tell you. You can get a lot of this on the Internet, although there is certainly even at Google a certain element to suppress things. You can go onto Google's start page, use other sites. But certainly even Google will tell you the truth about, at least as far as the Rat Line is concerned. Certainly here in America, why we brought the Nazis in under Operation Paperclip. Operation Paperclip, but into South America, why, of course, it wasn't just Mengele, it was certainly Martin Bormann and Adolf Eichmann and so many of the others, Mengele, I believe Adolf Hitler, I honestly believe, I've talked to people who were with Adolf Hitler, knew Adolf Hitler, took care of Adolf Hitler until he died in 1962. We interviewed this gentleman. We carry the book he co-wrote called the Gray Wolf. But you're never going to hear this discussed on the major media because the major media is controlled. Your reality is controlled. We live in certainly a situation where most of what we know is not true. It's all imaginary. Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian and Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring, unless you understand there are forces working behind the scenes that work hand in hand with evil and with people like Joseph Mengele. Why very little that's going on today really makes sense. So you pick up the story there, Doug. We were talking about Dr. Mengele in South America.
Yeah, and so the histories that are more or less accepted by, we'll say, the academians would suggest that Mengele lived in South America. He was discovered from time to time, particularly when Adolf Eichmann was rounded up by the Mossad. I believe it was in 1961. Taken back to Israel, was tried and eventually hung for his crimes as more or less the, if not the mastermind, at least the sort of executioner that was at the helm in terms of the Holocaust and the killing of so many millions of both Jews and Gypsies and many Christians as well. But nevertheless, when Eichmann was flushed from Argentina, Mengele also became much harder to find and move. And so, anyway, it's assumed that Mengele was always hiding in South America, and that eventually he was died of a heart attack on a beach in outside of Sao Paulo, Brazil. Now, that's the traditional story. But for really, since even in the 1950s and coming forward, there have been rumors that Mengele, in fact, was not just in South America, that he was, in fact, in the United States. Some have gone so far as to suggest that he was in the employ as a contractor for the CIA. And in fact, that's what I believe. In the last chapter of Power Quest Book 2, I go into the discussions of Mengele, what happened with Mengele, and exactly what was he doing, why was he hired by the CIA, and, you know, how frequently was he in America, and how did his death finally come about. And to say the least, the story is absolutely astounding. It's shocking, discouraging, but nevertheless, from the many witnesses that I have talked to, and I know Dr. Sin, you have talked to many as well, these things appear to be true. But as you said, it's not that we're going to hear these things from the major media sources. They're not going to talk about it.
And yes, basically, I had actually talked to three people who told me that they had met Dr. Mengele when he was here in America. And there's a Dr. Colin Ross who's written about this. He has a medical practice in Texas. And I asked him on one of our conversations if he had ever heard of anybody who had actually met Mengele. And he told me he had met three people who had met Mengele here in the United States. So I think there is a great deal of evidence of what you're saying is absolutely true. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's correct. And so we'll talk more about a particular book, a lady named Carol Lutz, R-U-T-Z, that's written a book called A Nation Betrayed. And that's one of the sources that I use, but I've also done some primary research and talked with a gentleman off and on, become a good friend over the last year and a half, who you've also had on your show, Pastor Doug Riggs. And Pastor Riggs leads a community called Morning Star Community in New York. And there are a number of individuals in his community, and then a number of other counselors around the country, in New Jersey, in Washington, and other parts of the country that have worked with counseling, have counseled victims of the Operation MK Ultra that was run by Alan Dulles and Sidney Gottlieb of the CIA in the 1950s. And Mengele seems very much to have been one of their technical advisors involved in this project.
You know, and basically when you tell people that, their eyes glass over and they say that couldn't be true. Well, of course, it couldn't be true that we helped between 10 and 30,000 Nazis who escaped to South America. But of course, it really is true. And fortunately, we do have the internet now, and you can actually verify many of these things on the internet. Simply go up and look up Ratline, R-A-T line, and basically, there was a 2020 program many years ago where Sam Donaldson actually went to South America and talked about the Ratline, and basically, I saw this, it was up available on the internet. Sam Donaldson went to South America and interviewed many of the Nazis who, had, by the time he interviewed them, had been living there 20 years or more. But you see, we will never talk about this on ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, because your reality is what you have been programmed to believe. You're out there in the listening audience. So this is why I would suggest that you heed what Doug is saying, because the information, the documentation is there. This is the true source of what's going on. There really is organized evil in the world, and there are people in key positions in our government who've been part of this, what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, organized evil responsible for terrible atrocities. It wasn't just the Nazis. They were funded all during the Second World War by American banks, including Brown Brothers Harriman, that was headed by a man named Prescott Bush, who was actually indicted in 1942 for his aid to the Nazis. And you can find this, you can find the indictment on the internet under Prescott Bush, indicted aid Nazi, something like that. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, your reality has been created by dark and sinister spirits of forces. Go right ahead, Doug.
Yeah, and so part of the story that has to be told to appreciate why it is that America might have worked with the Nazis is to understand that, as outlandish as it sounds, this is well documented by many sources that have no particular axe to grind other than to tell the truth, such as Edwin Black, Stephen Kuhl, and many others that have talked about the eugenics movement. You've had a chance to talk about this, but it turns out that many Americans, even David Starr Jordan, who was the president of Stanford University in 1902, released a book called Race and Blood. The main point is that many Americans actually furnished the ideologies of racial purity, of eugenics, which means well-bred or well-healed, basically. And eugenics was an American movement that was up and going 20, 25 years before Hitler wrote Mein Kampf. And Hitler borrowed many of the ideas, cited many of the ideas, particularly Henry Ford. He wrote a book called The International Jew. And then there were, again, there was a whole movement funded by the Rockefellers, eugenics movement, and a particular office called the Office of Eugenics Records Office in Cold Springs Harbor, Long Island. This was in play in 1905, 1910. Supreme Court decisions, Oliver Wendell Holmes, Buck versus Bell, 1927, that basically codified into American law the belief in racial prejudice and bigotry, and that it was legally okay, it was legal to forcibly sterilize individuals that the state or federal government deemed to be feeble-minded. And so Kerry Buck was actually sterilized. And eventually, over 60,000 Americans were sterilized, particularly in the states of California and Virginia. This all happened well before World War II. I could go into much more depth. We've talked about it before, but suffice it to say that it's well documented by many sources that America was very involved in creating the ideology, not to mention some of the occult ideology, like a Madame Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, her secret doctrine that was read by a number of the Nazi leaders, Heinrich Himmler, Rudolf Sobotendorf, and others, Adolf Hitler, that influenced their anti-Semitism and so forth. So all of this was background that led up eventually to Dr. Joseph Mengele in 1920, working for a Dr. Otmar von Bischoer in the Kaiser Wilhelm Institutes in Germany that were financed predominantly by the Rockefeller, in the guise of creating racial purity amongst the Nordic or the Aryan races.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Doug Woodward. People really don't understand. This is not simply history. The same thing is going on in the past. Sometime we'll do a program on the organized program of genocide of the black race in America today. Not imaginary, really very, very real. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and get back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do what you sound. Being free of diseases, free of well. Home for Health.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging, Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now, 1-866-405-4000. 405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. 8927.
Well, Dr. Stan, our guest Doug Woodward, and Doug, you picked the story up from there. We were just talking about Dr. Mengele, and of course, all the things that have been done to conceal the truth about what happened to this man and so many of the other Nazis. It's so difficult for people to believe that all of their education, certainly the things they learned in school, the things they read in books, the things they learned in college, what we hear talked about repeatedly on the History Channel, most of it is just absolutely not true. Occasionally you'll get the truth, but very rarely. Go right ahead, Doug.
Yeah, certainly you get a slice of the truth, but you don't get some of the most damaging elements of the truth. And that's certainly the case with Dr. Sashur and Dr. Mengele in terms of their involvement. The Mengele story really, for most folks that understand something about him, begins with the fact that he was really one of the leaders at the Auschwitz concentration or death camp in Poland. And that he would notoriously stand as the trains were being unloaded and as the mostly Jews were being brought into Auschwitz, he would give a thumbs up or thumbs down, literally, to individuals that were paraded in front of him. And if he signaled thumbs down or to the left, then those individuals would immediately go to the gas chamber. If he signaled thumbs up or to the right, then they would be preserved. Either to work in the camp as slaves or potentially to be Dr. Mengele's guest to do various heinous types of medical experiments on these people. In particular, Dr. Mengele was famous for calling out, trying to find twins. So he would, I'm probably pronouncing the German word incorrectly, but Zwingli, he would yell out parents of twins would quickly bring their twins to the front, hoping that that would preserve their lives. But as it turns out, during the course of about a year and a half, when Mengele was at Auschwitz, before the Russians finally came through to, in effect, liberate the camp, over 1,500 twins were identified. And at the end of the time when the camp was finally liberated, only 200 sets of twins were still left alive. So now, listener might ask, well, why was he interested in twins? Well, because this was part of the whole issue of eugenics and the issue of nature versus nurture. Dr. Mengele had studied under Dr. von Bashur at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, and really all the way back to the times of Francis Galton and others, the studies and the issue of what was more important. Was it breeding or was it environment? What would have more impact upon behavior? And so there were many studies that had been done for really decades. Sashur and Mengele were sort of only the kind of the horrible icing on the cake, if you will, that concluded the studies that were being done by twins. But Mengele was just ruthless, doing experiments and horrible atrocities. Some have said that they walked into his laboratory and on the wall, you would discover just hundreds of sets of pairs of eyes, that Mengele was obsessed with the issue of eye color. And it was part of, you saw this in the movie, The Boys from Brazil, where Mengele was trying to turn brown eyes blue, and was never actually succeeded in doing that. But this was all to kind of fit into the concept of the Aryan race. Americans called the blonde-haired, blue-eyed ideal the Nordic race, and it was the American ideology of the 1910s, 1920s, as I mentioned, that was emphasizing that America should focus on white race and the Nordic element of that. And basically, Hitler picked up on this, but used and talked about the Aryan race, the Indo-European race, but more specifically talked about the effect the Northern European races. Kind of included in all of that was the whole issue of Norse mythology, the stories of Wicca, the accounts and of Thor and Odin and Valhalla and the Valkyries and so forth. This was all part of the Aryan myth, and it was part of the plan, though, to, in effect, recreate humanity into a perfected form. And so this was where Mengele was coming from, was part of this drive for creating the ideal humanity and turning humankind into God.
And it's just like breeding animals. They were going to breed humans without understanding there is a God. And certainly God does determine the course of humanity and the genetic makeup. God created the genes. But basically, of course, you have here certainly a whole philosophy. Man is going to become God. Man is going to change the course of humanity. Man is going to change the color of the eyes, certainly the structure, certainly of society. They actually bred literally tens of thousands of blonde-haired, blue-eyed people, and in an effort to create this wonderful super race. That's what it was really all about.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden, all heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess is Doug Woodward. Doug, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get your website and get your other material? And then we'll get back to the incredible story of Dr. Mengele, which most Americans have never been allowed to hear. But go ahead.
Sure. Folks can find me by doing a simple search with Google or Bing. I have to say Bing because my daughter works for Microsoft. They can look for Doug Woodward or DougWoodward.com. That will take them to my site. My site is officially faithhappens.com, faith-happens.com, and you'll find their posts that I'm doing. I'm working on two new books. You'll find information about that. I'm also releasing a book in conjunction with a group out of London called Rhema Marketing, and that will be announced and coming out probably in the next week or so. So quite a bit of activity. And so that's how folks can find me. So just do a DougWoodward.com, type in at your browser, and it should take you right to my website.
Okay, fine. Well, now let's get back to Dr. Mengele. And basically, the whole idea that they were going to breed a super race. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, so after the Russians basically came into Auschwitz and liberated the camp for about 4 years, Mengele hid, was in American prisoner of war camps, was eventually escaped Europe after about 4 years, went to South America through the rat line. And there's a biographer named Gerald Posner who wrote a book called Mengele, The Complete Story. And, of course, it's really not the complete story. Posner sort of poo-poos the idea that Mengele might have been involved in activities in America. But he makes one kind of serious omission or admission, which is that from 1951 until about 1961, although afterwards Mengele kept a meticulous diary, during that 10-year period, he did not keep track and did not write down where he was. It was assumed, because he certainly was in Argentina in Buenos Aires, he set up a business, and he worked and was in social contact with a number of the Germans, like Eichmann and others. But nevertheless, for the most part, his whereabouts during that period of time had just been assumed that he was in Buenos Aires. However, the witnesses that you've talked to, that I've talked to, and that have been written about in a number of books, suggest that during that period, the 1950s, Mengele was actually under the hire of both the nobility of Europe and, in particular, the CIA in America, and that Mengele was involved in Project MKUltra, which was Alan Dulles' sort of pet project. It was run by a Dr. Sidney Gottlieb. And Gottlieb and Dulles were particularly focused on developing what we commonly call the Manchurian Candidate, developing a spy or an assassin that would unquestionably follow whatever the orders were. And so the issue was for them was to study the nature of human physiology and psychology to determine how could they create most effectively the Manchurian Candidate. So they tried hypnosis, they tried drugs, that's where the emphasis on LSD came from, as in effect working out some sort of a truth serum. But Dr. Stan, what they discovered after years of research was the most effective way to program or train individuals, the assassins, was to program and train children, typically under the age of 6, and to train them through what's known as trauma-based mind control, which Dr. Colin Ross, you mentioned earlier, he has written a book originally called Project Blue Book, or Blue Bird, rather, and been recently updated called The CIA Doctors. And Ross talks about this.
And incidentally, we do carry that book. If anybody's interested, we do carry Colin Ross's The CIA Doctors. Yes. All of these things, and we even have a whole flock of interviews with Colin Ross and some of our four tape sets, and they are available, 4-CD sets, available from Radio Liberty. You need to have this information. We don't talk about it, mainly because we've explored it so thoroughly in the past. But you go right ahead, Doug. The information is available through my ministry. You want to get it. You want to understand, because the people who, if you don't understand what's happened in the past, you certainly can't understand the things that are unfolding today. Go right ahead, Doug.
Right. Yes. Well, many of these things, and we've talked about this, Dr. Stan, are well documented, even in the official government documents. And we know that in 1975 that the so-called Church Committee and Otis Pike in the House, the Pike Committee, did investigations into the activities of the CIA and military intelligence. And this was studied in 1975, and substantial reports came out at that time. And then also in 1995, Bill Clinton did investigations on the issue of multiple personality disorder, trauma-based mind control, and this testimony was given before congressional members. It's part of the congressional record. In fact, videos of some of the interviews done with some of the victims of this CIA programming, such as Kathy O'Brien, Bryce Taylor, and others, it's available on YouTube. You can actually go out and see these interviews that were done back in 1995. So these things that I'm bringing together in my books are actually quite well documented. It's just that they have not been assembled necessarily in a way to convey to people what happened. And then there's a lot of missing pieces, particularly Mengele, who plays a star role in this programming situation. So during the 1950s, MKUltra had over 147 sub-projects involved. Doctors and academics from all over the United States and Canada. Dr. Ewan Cameron was particularly involved in MKUltra. He was in Montreal there, but he was under the employ of the CIA. It's all part of the, you know, government records. So we know all these things to be true. Cameron was at one time not only the head of the United States Psychiatric Association, but the head of the International Association. And yet he was a almost fiendish in his use of electroshock therapy, again, as a technique to learn how to facilitate mind control.
What's the title of your book that covers this?
Yes, the last book, Power Quest.
Power Quest, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Power Quest, book two, and the subtitle is The Ascendancy of Antichrist in America. The main point I'm making is that there are many practices of our government that, unfortunately, our government's done many wonderful things, and there are many wonderful people that serve in our government and serve in the CIA. But there also has been a ruthless sect that has grown up perhaps overly concerned or obsessed with the issue of the Cold War back during the 50s and 70s. And since that time, other things to provide greater, from their standpoint, security of the United States, or to, in effect, to facilitate the agenda, we would argue, of wealthy elites to maintain control of various governments, supposedly pure republic democracies around the world. Nevertheless, these individuals are there, and they have been involved in these kind of nefarious activities. So Mengele, I believe, and the evidence and the research that I've studied suggests that he, in fact, had done significant amounts of this type of testing in Auschwitz as part of the experiment that he was involved in. He may have worked with a Dr. John Bowlby, who was associated with attachment theory. Bowlby was the originator of the attachment theory, working in the an institute in London. And all of these doctors were conversant with one another. And so I go into considerable detail talking about Mengele in America during the 1950s and his involvement in actually programming a number of individuals, many of them from wealthy families, but not all. Some of them were, in fact, from families that had been filtered and had been screened by the use of a personality test developed by Dr. John Gittinger that had worked at the University of Oklahoma Medical Center. I am sensitive to that because I went to the University of Oklahoma, and my wife used to work at the medical center long after, of course, Gittinger was doing this back in the 1960s and 70s. But the personality assessment system, the PAS, was developed by Gittinger during this time. And what they would do is use the test to screen for individuals in the military that they could tell from the personality testing were susceptible to being blackmailed because they were perhaps pedophiles. Or they may have had, they also did this, they basically blackmailed and utilized the mafia individuals, members. But the story is, it's truly unbelievable, but it's been testified to by so many people that the CIA in MKUltra developed child assassins and child prostitutes to be used to provide entrapment of individuals and then blackmail them in order to get their cooperation. And eventually, many of these were set up as assassins, as potential assassins, to lay in wait, perhaps for years, perhaps for decades. And so Mengele, it is believed, and the testimony seems to be very compelling, that he was one of the primary sort of intellectual consultants that was involved in the techniques associated with, in effect, multiple personality disorder, DID, or using, in effect, trauma-based mind control as a means to split the personality and to create individual personalities that can be programmed to do various kinds of things including programs to self-destruct, programs to use what we would consider paranormal capabilities to potentially even assassinate individuals with paranormal powers. This is discussed by Carol Ruth in her book, A Nation Betrayed. This was part of a kind of a landmark study and speech that was actually given by Dr. Corey Don Hammond back in 1992 that many people, hundreds of people attended. Doug Riggs was there actually at that speech. He's talked about that. And so this was, this has been, in effect, the whole concept of multiple personality disorder, now known as dissociative identity disorder. Very well known that this, in fact, was the kind of core programming technique, the most reliable type of technique for mind control, specifically to create these types of individuals that could be used within either military or civilian intelligence operations and practices.
Well, I think there's no question that this is real, but the thing, this information has been very well suppressed. People don't like to believe that these terrible things go on and financed with our tax money. But it's not because America is bad. It's because we have an invisible government that's taken over control of our legitimate government, our Constitution, certainly the foundation of the country. It was a wonderful, wonderful situation. Unfortunately, there are evil people, and very quietly they've worked behind the scenes, amassing phenomenal wealth, taking control of our banking system so they could create unlimited amounts of money, and then using that money to consolidate their power, or certainly over our corporations, over our media, over our educational system, yes, even over many of our major certainly of seminaries where they train both Catholic and Protestant ministers. Go right ahead, Douglas.
Yeah, well, of course, one of the issues that comes up is now, wait a second, how in the world is it possible that Mengele could have been, in fact, brought into the country, and how is this possible? Turns out I go in and I document a couple of different situations, a couple of individuals that were war criminals that the CIA brought into this country, and Alloy Bruner was one, talked about by Christopher Simpson in his book, The 1988 Blowback, which was a book that documented the practices of the CIA as part of the Cold War. The overall principle here, keep in mind, is that coming out of World War II, America was very fearful of the, you might call it the Soviet menace. It was fearful of communism that was marching, taking over countries all across the globe. Americans were very fearful. Americans had heard many stories, fearful stories of Soviet programming and brainwashing. The original movie, The Manchurian Candidate, starred Frank Sinatra and Lawrence Harvey as the Manchurian Candidate, and Angela Lansbury as the mom. Recently, that movie was remade with Denzel Washington, with Meryl Streep, and so forth. But the concept was this type of programming that supposedly the Chinese did, the Red Chinese, in the Korean War, when American prisoners were traveling by train through China, from North Korea into China, and they would make a stop at Manchuria. That's where the name came from. And they were programmed, supposedly, perhaps, in that area. And this was talked about in the Miami Herald by one of the reporters back in the 1950s. It became kind of a thing that Alan Dulles began to campaign for. And so you had this great paranoia and fear of the communists. And so along with that, the CIA not only was involved in this type of mind control programming with individuals, but it was also involved on a massive scale, with various kinds of, we could call it propaganda, but it was in effect reinforcing the fear of communism and reinforcing the importance for enhanced security and things like that. And so this was going on during the 1960s and 1970s. One time the CIA was spending, almost $257 million annually on various magazines, books that were being written to sort of reinforce the importance of security,
reinforcing, of course, the values of America. Many of these things, of course, are not necessarily truths or questions that, you know, ideas that we would challenge. We would agree with them. But the real question was, should the government be spending tax dollars to try to reinforce this kind of, in effect, mind control programming of the population?
But, of course, the whole thing is that basically, on one hand, we were financing communism. On the other hand, we were financing all of these mind control programs so that we would be able to have people, so that we would be able to fight communism. Because you just have to have an enemy so you can rally the people behind the government so you can justify all of these programs. And they really did. There was a wonderful television program, really very true to life, called The Pretender many years ago, about a young man who had suddenly been kidnapped from his family. And then, of course, they'd programmed him, and they did all of these terrible things. He became, had many amazing capabilities because, of course, they had changed and altered the structure of his mind. But if you ever have a chance to see The Pretender, probably they'll never show it again, but it was really based upon what really happened. And basically, the Manchurian candidates were programmed and then brought back to America. And the average individual really doesn't understand how these wicked people have been working behind the scenes and actually using many of the techniques that were developed by the Nazis and by the communists right here in America, getting our children at a very young age. Certainly some of them were in schools and others actually kidnapped and actually taken to training camps where their whole outlook on the world was altered. Our guest is Doug Woodward, who will be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program right here at Radio Liberty.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and get back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do what you said. Be free of diseases, real well. Home for Health.
There is a disturbing trend here in these United States that is progressing unnoticed and without constraint. From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we have seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. Our founding fathers designed our three-part governmental system to have checks and balances upon each other. Each branch of the government has now taken upon itself power that was never intended for it to have. The judicial branch in particular needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. There you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
Forward to seeing you here in about a month.
Very good.
Bye-bye. God bless.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, that was Doug Woodward, and of course, his book on Patriot 2. We actually have a 4-CD set on mind control that covers a great deal of the same material. My interviews with Mark Phillips, Kathy O'Brien, and Kathy, of course, was a victim of CIA mind control. Doug's book is called Power Quest 1 and Power Quest 2, and what he's been talking tonight has come from Power Quest 2. And then, of course, we do hope many of you out there will get certainly my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness, because it will help you to understand the spiritual forces at work within our society. And then, of course, we have a talk. It's called Agenda 21, The Covert Plan. And it will take you behind the scenes of what's going on today. The genocidal programs which are being carried out today. And people say genocidal programs, what do you mean? Well, basically, the fact that there are treatments for cancer, they're being actively suppressed, that they are actually promoting things, such as the poisoning of the air. And if you don't believe that there's aluminum, certainly that there's putting out from the jets, simply go up in the internet and your website is search engine and type in jet fuel aluminum, and you'll find that there's aluminum in the jet fuel, aluminum particles. They're poisoning the water with hydrofluorosilicic acid, which dramatically increases the level of lead in the blood of black men because of genetic differences, which, and basically you can correlate it with criminal activity, so that today in America, of black men ages 21 to 31, 1 in 3 is in prison, probation, or parole. And it's simply because they're poisoning the water with hydrofluorosilicic acid. You need to get my syllabus on this subject, on AIDS, on Agenda 21, the covert plan. Then we get into the background of that. We also have a great talk on fluoride, the hidden agenda. And you get the syllabus that goes with that. You need to get this information, and then you need to help us get it out across America. But they're actively suppressing effective cancer treatments. They're poisoning the water with fluoride. They're poisoning the air with aluminum and all sorts of aluminum compounds. And they're poisoning certainly our food with aspartame and MSG and with genetically modified food. And basically, in animals, after 3 or 4 generations of eating genetically modified food, like they're giving you, why they're infertile. And, of course, it dramatically increases the incidence of cancer. And you say, well, that couldn't be true, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, it is true. And you can check out all of these things. Now, remember, the enemy uses the Internet. They put up all sorts of things on the Internet that are true, so you're going to have to go through. But you can find both the truth and you can find the falsehood up there. I suggest you dedicate yourself to finding the truth, and then hopefully many of you will join us in this struggle in which we're engaged today for the survival of Christian civilization. We hope if you're in a position to help us financially, you'll join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or certainly get our health products, or get the Berkey water filters we have, and incidentally you can get the Royal Berkey now, just $10 more than the regular Berkey. It's something you need to have on hand, because we're going to have, I believe, some cataclysmic changes here in America. God begins to bring his wrath on this country. After all, America has turned away from God, and if you don't think God is going to bring his judgment on this nation, you haven't read the Bible and studied what's happened to nations in the past when they've turned their back on God. Under any circumstances, if you're in a position to get the products that we carry, and the health products we certainly recommend, the spices, the Miracle 2 products, the Berkey products, and then certainly our DVDs and our books and our CD sets. And then, of course, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, all by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. That 4-CD set on mind control is something very important. And then we ask you, of course, to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders, our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision, protection. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. guide her through the night with a light from above, from the mountain.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization and Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, hopefully they're going to be the views of William Grigg. And William, of course, is certainly formerly the senior editor of the New American magazine, the editor of Republic magazine. He's a prolific writer, and certainly he writes the Radio Liberty newsletters now. I just don't have the time to do it. It takes me too long to write them. So basically, we've gotten William, and he's doing a wonderful, wonderful job. And of course, when you subscribe to the Radio Liberty newsletter, you're going to get the monthly Sunday presentations of William. And right now, let's go to William Grigg. Hi, William. How are we doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well. It's always a pleasure and a blessing to be with you.
What are we going to be talking about this evening?
I wanted to start with an update on the situation with Rita Hutchins, the woman I discussed last week from Sandpoint, Idaho, who's facing a really bizarre legal persecution, which is to say persecution conducted under the forms of supposed law. Just by way of a brief recap, she was assaulted on her property in November of 2011 by a female cop from Sandpoint. This happened after a woman whom she was evicting from her home, Rita Hutchins, was evicting from a rental property, had accused Rita of stalking her or harassing her. There was no evidence except for the word of this woman who had been arrested the previous day on warrant. She was not a particularly reputable person. Rita had driven past the rental property to see if the power was still on, and she wanted to go in and see if the water had been turned off pursuant to the eviction. She drove past twice within a period of perhaps a half an hour. She had seen that the woman was conversing with the police officer. Rita understandably didn't want to get in the way of that. She went home, and after she pulled into her driveway, she found out the police officer followed her to her home. The officer wanted to speak to her. Rita said, "I have nothing to say to you," turned to go into her home. That effectively ended the conversation. But the police officer assaulted Rita, threw her to the ground, bruised her, injured her physically, handcuffed her, and then started to look for an excuse to justify an arrest. She eventually settled on the charge of resisting arrest, which I believe shouldn't be considered a crime unless you've actually committed a primary offense against person or property. She was taken to the jail and booked on a charge of resisting and obstructing. When this was brought to trial a number of months later, was thrown out of court because the judge quite sensibly ruled that there was no reason for the police officer to be on Rita's property. There was certainly no reason for the police officer to assault her, and there was no reason to justify the arrest. So what you're dealing with here is aggravated armed assault plus abduction under the color of the supposed law. A few months later, actually a few weeks later, Rita filed a request with the city of Sandpoint for damages, because she had medical bills to pay, and she had other, of course, reasons for seeking some kind of compensation for what she'd experienced. That claim was turned down by the city attorney, the same woman who had prosecuted Rita in court on the bogus obstruction charge, was the one who turned down her request for damages. So Rita filed a notice of tort claim that she was going to be suing the city of Sandpoint in Bonner County, Idaho. That's a county up in the northern panhandle of the state of Idaho. Last August, she went to City Hall to look into the records of her arrest and some other matters. And in the course of her visit, she was harassed by city officials. She was told to leave, and after she left, she was charged with battery on a city official because a ballpoint pen she had supposedly thrown at a desktop had ricocheted and hit a deputy clerk in the shoulder. And this is the charge that they're using to try to send her to prison, or, if that fails, to a mental institution. She's supposed to undergo a psychological profile or evaluation because she's supposedly psychotic on account of her desire to receive compensation for her injuries.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with William Cragen. Now, there is injustice out there, and sometimes government officials can be incorrect. William, you go right ahead.
All right. I wanted to give a brief recap of Rita's situation and give a little bit of an update on what's going on. I'd mentioned that she was arrested on a charge of battery, and the deputy Bonner County prosecutor, a man by the name of Shane Greenbank, who's got a terrible reputation, when he was the deputy prosecutor of Kootenai County, he was slapped down on a handful of occasions, and in one specific case, three separate times, by appellate judges for misconduct as a prosecutor that denied a defendant a fair trial. This is a guy who's got a bit of a history. But he referred to the supposed incident in which Rita Hutchins threw down a ballpoint pen that ricocheted off of a desktop and hit a deputy clerk as battery that is a grave, how did he put it, a grave offense against the peace and dignity of the state of Idaho. And he's seeking to have her prosecuted on that supposed, on the basis of that supposed crime. A bench warrant was issued and, in a very confusing and contradictory way, was sent to Rita's home. She had been pursuing an investigation of a number of the officials involved in this, and the day after she had filed a request for documents, last April 16th to be specific, at midnight, three police officers, that is to say two officers from Sandpoint, the Sandpoint Police Department, and one deputy sheriff, knocked on her door when she was sleeping, partially dressed, on the sofa of her living room in order to conduct an enforcement of this bench warrant at midnight. There's no reason to enforce a bench warrant at midnight, none at all whatsoever, unless you're simply trying to harass and torment somebody. So she was dragged out of her home at midnight on April 16th on the basis of a bench warrant that didn't need to be issued, pursuant to a case in which she's accused of battery because somebody got hit with a ballpoint pen that ricocheted off a desk. This, once again, patent persecution. After that bench warrant was issued, actually before the bench warrant was issued, the prosecutor, Shane Greenbank, had filed a request for a psychological evaluation on the basis of what he said was her erratic behavior. Mr. Greenbank is summarily unqualified to assess somebody else's psychological condition. Bear in mind, this is somebody who got slapped down by an appellate judge because of a theatrical display in 2008 during a domestic violence case in which he cried as he described the alleged offenses committed by the defendant. That prompted the trial judge to bring down the gavel and declare a mistrial because as Greenbank was standing there, he was trying to manipulate the jury, and then he compounded that offense by lying about what he was doing. So this is somebody who perhaps has a very tenuous purchase on reality himself. He certainly does not have the professional credentials to be assessing somebody else's mental health. The fact is he doesn't like Rita Hutchins, and he's trying to make an example of her. And so in the request for...
I'm going to ask you to hold that for just a moment, and we'll be right back with all of our stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply pointing out that Rita Hutchins has been indicted because she threw a ballpoint pen down and ricocheted off the top of a desk and hit somebody who worked in the office. And so this was an aggravated battery. Then they issued a bench warrant for her, and three officers came at midnight to serve that and arrested her and took her to prison. And this is all part of a pattern of harassment. They demand that she have a psychiatric evaluation because, of course, she's acting erratically. Well, she's certainly is very upset that they have obviously targeted her because she brought a suit against the city for basically a battery being thrown down on the ground, being actually handcuffed, being indicted, being taken to court, having to defend herself. Of course, the judge threw the case out. But now, of course, now we find out that Sydney, they're after trying to get her to be seen by a psychiatrist. They want to send her to an institution. This is all part of a personal vendetta, it would appear, on the people of the prosecutor there in Sandpoint, Idaho, who basically has a poor reputation. In fact, he's been chastised a number of times by judges for certainly handling of other cases in an improper manner. So pick up the story, William. Basically, of course, last week after you gave your presentation, several people called in and wanted to help this woman financially because this is aimed at bankrupting her and she's having real financial problems. And I think we have an obligation to try to help her. And I'm just hoping and praying that we can find legal help for her basically, she's not a wealthy individual at all. But basically, they're going to bankrupt her. Why? Because they dislike her. Because she wouldn't simply give in to these people misusing power. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, power corrupts absolutely, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. Go ahead.
And a corollary to that, I would suggest, is that there is no such thing as a government that is too small to impoverish you or perhaps to annihilate you. And Sandpoint is a town of about 7,000 people. It's roughly the same size as Payette, where I live. And it's in a rural, relatively thinly populated part of Idaho. It's a resort community. It depends on tourism, ski tourism in particular. In any case, this request for a psychological evaluation stipulated a number of supposed facts that are not in evidence. Among them is the claim that Rita Hutchins battered the prosecutor, Shane Greenbank. Now, that's something that is not the subject of a criminal complaint. There's no police report of an alleged incident of battery. Mr. Greenbank cannot say that he was injured in any sense. What had happened is that he had handed a sheaf of papers to Rita Hutchins, and she handed them back to him. So the papers came into contact with his august person, and on that basis, he claims that he was battered by Rita Hutchins. And that claim was accepted by the judge that has issued an order that Rita undergo a mandatory psychological evaluation. She actually spoke with a psychologist a couple of weeks ago. I think it was exactly a week ago, as a matter of fact. And the psychiatrist, not a psychologist, a psychiatrist, an MD psychiatrist, didn't conduct a formal evaluation, but what he told her was that she obviously should be standing up for her rights, because he seems to think that there's some merit to what she's saying in terms of the unjust treatment she's receiving from city officials, county officials. He's been removed now, and she's been ordered to go to a different psychiatrist. This is the psychiatrist who's much closer, apparently, to the people in positions of official authority there in Bonner County and the environs. So that's the bad news, and it's all very bad news, and she's scheduled, I believe, for a hearing in a week and a half or thereabouts. The good news, and it's, I should say, preliminary good news, is that a couple of days ago, I believe it was Tuesday, actually, it might have been Wednesday, at my first opportunity, I contacted the Rutherford Institute to find out that they had read the story I had published about Rita Hutchins, and they were already on the case. They've contacted her. They've got an attorney who's looking into her legal situation, receiving all kinds of paperwork from Rita, who's been very fastidious about keeping records and obtaining documents through discovery. And so the Rutherford Institute, which is right now involved in a lawsuit on behalf of Brandon Raub, who's a former Marine who is in a situation somewhat similar to Rita's in some respects, they're on the case. And I'm glad to hear this, because they are a very formidable advocate on behalf of those who are wronged by officious corrupt people in positions of purported authority.
But of course, the only thing that you can do is launch a countersuit against the city officials, and basically then, of course, it has to get in the paper, and hopefully then the people will rise up and throw those irresponsible people out. So it's so much easier just to not be involved and not have to worry about what your government is doing. But when they're doing something wrong, the one thing, of course, you're worried about as a citizen of a community is that it's going to cost you money. And basically, the money is going to come from the taxes. So you better get involved, and you better have responsible people in office, because if you don't, why, it could raise your taxes. That is the one means by which hopefully people there will get incensed and get rid of those people. Go right ahead.
That's an interesting point you raise about the taxes here and the nature of Sandpoint as a community. And I'm getting to the point where every time I hear the word community, I rhetorically and philosophically release the safety on my handgun, so to speak, because every time somebody invokes community, it seems, they're doing so in order to justify an imposition on the rights of an individual that otherwise would not be tolerated. It's a type of very crude collectivist utilitarianism. The community outweighs your needs. Your needs are of no import when you're talking about the greater needs of the many. And I reflexively bridle at that, because that's simply not the way morality works. Moral claims apply to the individual just as they apply to groups of individuals. And one man with the truth is a majority, as Athanasius pointed out many, many centuries ago. But in Sandpoint, you've got a situation where there is a record here on behalf of that town and that county government. I don't know if you remember the case of Joanne McGuckin. She was a widow
who lived in Sandpoint with several children. Her husband died after a long bout with multiple sclerosis. He'd actually been born into a very wealthy family in Boston. He was a trust fund baby. And rather than going into finance or going into arbitrage or going into any of these other fields where he could expand upon his inherited fortune and be a prominent member of the Mandarin class there on the Eastern Seaboard, he came west because he wanted to live a more frugal and more elemental existence. He ended up in California. He had a marriage that failed, and during that marriage, he and his then-wife moved to Sandpoint and started a lumber business. Unfortunately, this was in the early 1980s, where the bottom fell out of the lumber industry for a while, and things didn't improve in the early 1990s when you had huge tracts of national forest being shut down as a result of the assault on extraction industries in the western United States, where most of the property, most of the land, is claimed by the federal government, which has no legitimate constitutional, let alone moral right, to make that claim. So he fell on hard times, and he was living off of a trust fund of about $500,000. And he met and married Joanne. She was a local woman, the daughter, I believe, of a logger. And they set up a home that was meant to be self-sustaining and self-sufficient by Lake Ponderelle. And they were in a situation where they could live off the land supplemented by the interest on this trust fund. But then he ended up getting sick, multiple sclerosis, of course, terrible degenerative disorder. He spent year after year, more than a decade, if memory serves, wasting away while his wife tended to him and the children did what they could to keep the household up and running. They were a homeschooled family. They were fiercely independent. They had, as so many other people in northern Idaho have, a properly hostile attitude toward official authority on account of the abuse that we see of official authority. They did not reject the idea of authority. They had rejected the abuse of authority, and they wanted to live their own lives, and they pretty much reciprocated their desire, their demand for their rights to be respected. They were not squatters. They were not people who trashed their property. They were not the sort of people who would impose on their neighbors. They just kept it themselves, and they pursued their own views. Well, he died, Mr. McGuckin did, I believe in early 2001. And after many, many years of holding state and county welfare authorities at bay, finally Joanne McGuckin consented to have her husband's body taken in by the local undertaker so that he could be given a proper burial. Unfortunately, this brought them to the attention of the Bonner County Sheriff's Department and the local child welfare authority. So, under the guise of saying that they would be providing her with food aid for her children, a sheriff's deputy and, I believe, a member of the local child welfare agency lured her off her property and then slapped handcuffs on her and took her into custody and accused her of child neglect. And as this was happening, another deputy, actually there were several deputies involved in this, this is in early 2001, I believe. Actually, it was in the year 2000, not 2001. Several of the deputies tried to grab the children. One of the children reacted by kicking the deputy in the shin, which was exactly the right thing to do, and then running back into the house. And one of the deputies claims that he heard one of the children say, "Get the gun," which would also be an appropriate reaction if you're seeing your mother abducted as she was being abducted by the sheriff's deputies. Well, there was a standoff for several days as deputy sheriffs did what they could to try to entice the children to come out of home. And eventually, one of the older children decided that he'd bring an end to the standoff, and he had been promised certain things that were not delivered. But they were put into foster care. They were put into foster care, and this is an unusual situation, with a family friend who actually had an interest in their welfare, as opposed to being farmed out to some random state-selected family of dubious pedigree and dubious standing. But what had happened in the interval is that the oldest daughter, who had enlisted in the Navy, decided that she would turn state's evidence against the family. And she, as an 18 or 19-year-old girl, had certain issues, outstanding issues with her mother and the way the household had been run. And so you had her offering testimony against her mother, describing all kinds of horrible things her mother had supposedly done. The mother ended up charged with felony child endangerment. And more importantly, the home and the property were seized by the local county, supposedly to pay back taxes. was a $50,000 tract of property that was seized to pay off a $1,800 tax debt. So there's your motive for what was done to this family in the same community where Rita Hutchins lives.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with William Grigg.
While a storm cloud gathers far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountains, through the prairie, through the ocean, white with gold. Oh, bless America, my home, sweet home.
Don't be late.
No.
White with gold. God bless America. My home.
Right, Pop? Right, son. Kind of makes you think of Blake, doesn't it? Makes you think of a lot of things. We're going to be in this yet, Mom.
Hello, son.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, darling.
New song?
Brand new, first time in the air.
Brand new, my eye. You know, I threw that song out of Yip Yip Yap Yang 22 years ago. Sounds better now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest William Grigg, and William's telling us about another similar incident in Standpoint, Idaho, where a woman, they actually seized her property. She owed $1,500 in taxes, so they seized a $50,000 property. But go right ahead, William.
Actually, it was about $5,000 in back taxes. She'd offered 1.75 acres to pay off the debt. They seized 40 acres with extensive lakefront exposure, so it was worth several orders of magnitude more than the tax debt that was assessed to her. And this was done, of course, pursuant to all this nonsense about her being a neglectful, a feloniously neglectful parent. There was an interview that was conducted in June of 2001, and I erred, by the way, in saying that this 2000 that occurred. She was arrested on May 29th, 2001. Bryce Powell, the defense attorney representing Joanne McGuckin, after the felony charges had been dismissed against her, it served its purpose. Basically, what they were doing is they were doing what in basketball would be called setting a pick. They used these cynical charges against her as delaying tactic in order to consummate the seizure of her property under the pretext that she owed back taxes. And, of course, she was willing to pay off the back taxes that had been assessed to her. Taxes are theft, but it's the type of theft we live with in our fallen world. She had agreed to give 1.75 acres to pay off the debt. That would have been, of course, proportionate. That's not what they wanted. They wanted that lakefront property. And so they stole the property while she was tied up in this legal morass. If you'll forgive me for mixing a metaphor there. The thing is, they're using the same tactics now against Rita Hutchins. What they're doing is they're using the spurious prosecution of a completely fraudulent battery charge against her, and then parallel track here of demanding that she undergo a psychiatric evaluation as a delaying tactic so she cannot file a lawsuit against the city and the county that she would almost certainly win.
Well, Chris, but now it sounds with the Rutherford Institute certainly behind her why she should do well.
I certainly hope so. In this interview from 2001 with Greta Van Susteren, who at the time was with CNN, Bryce Powell, the defense attorney, offered a very good summation of what was done to the McGuckin family. I think there's no question that the family lived in some tough conditions. That, bear in mind, the father had been dying for 13 years from multiple sclerosis. The family made a strategic decision that they would focus on caring for the dying father. They rejected government welfare. That's probably what got them in trouble as much as anything else. They were independent. They were self-sufficient. They did not believe in being in receipt of stolen property through redistribution of wealth. They were people who were a reproach and a rebuke to the collectivist ethic of this community. And they were seen as eccentric and perhaps a little bit rough-hewn. But the fact is they hurt nobody. They didn't harm each other. They were no threat to themselves or anybody else. But they were seen as people who were occupying attractive land that was being coveted by politically connected developers. So they ended up, of course, being on the receiving end of this officially sanctioned exercise in theft, abduction, and assault on the family. Powell was saying that there is no doubt that they lived in some rough conditions, but if you look at the big picture, you have to look at how tragic their life had become. This was a family that was affluent, that was doing well, and it slipped into poverty and ultimately the death of the father. One thing that was important that came out today is 4 days after the father's death, Joanne called the sheriff's office asking for help in a number of forms. She asked for help to get Social Security, asked for help to get a doctor, asked for help for buying property they did own, to get money for the family. In other words, they were trying to make some kind of a transaction here so they'd have more income. Rather than giving her that help, they decided instead to lure her from her home and place her under arrest and take custody of the children, as I described earlier. From the children's perspective, talking about the five-day standoff that ensued with five small children inside this home being ringed and surrounded by armed deputies. From the children's perspective, the mother had been lured away from the home under the guise of taking her to make a phone call for Social Security. The officer came back, tried to convince the kids to leave the home, but they didn't believe the officer. He grabbed one of the children who was able to wiggle away from him, and the dogs came after him. The sheriff, the deputy rather, shot three times, injuring two of the dogs. By the way, he's flinging lead in the general direction of a home that is occupied by five small children. That would be, at very least, criminal indifference to the safety of those children. That would be, of course, felonious conduct. Now, from the children's perspective, they didn't know if it was their brother who had been shot and killed. The brother did not return to the house at that point. They knew that their mother had been taken, the shots had been fired, that their brother had disappeared, and that two of their dogs had been shot, one in the head and one near the spine. So they were scared and afraid that they might have to defend themselves. And that's how we ended up with this standoff back in 2001, May of that year, that riveted the world and that created a regional furor, and it really should have. But this is the same collection of personalities, down to the magistrate judge, who have been involved in the persecution of Rita Hutchins for very similar reasons. And this is happening in tiny Sandpoint, Idaho, in the northern panhandle of the Gem State.
Well, of course, you can have corruption at any level of government. What we need, of course, are people who fear God. And unfortunately, why we've taken God out of our courts and out of our police system today, we'll be back in a moment.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
Well, William, you go right ahead, but let's hope that perhaps your involvement there in Sandpoint and the bringing Rutherford in, Rutherford Institute, may very well help to get a fair trial for this other lady, and hopefully that will draw people's attention to the inherent corruption. Sounds like the, certainly law enforcement and courts are working in collusion there, and I've seen the same sort of thing. I wonder who ended up with that very lush lakefront property.
That's something I intend to look into, because I intend to go to Sandpoint and talk to some people on the scene about what's happening, not only with respect to the Rita Hutchins case, but now from a perspective of a dozen years after the events, what happened with the disposition of the McGuckin home and property. The family was eventually reunited, except for the eldest daughter, who had become permanently estranged from the family after cooperating with the authorities. I think collaborating is a more appropriate expression. One of the things that happened during the first flush of publicity here was that as soon as the five children were taken into custody, surrendered to the so-called authorities there, the prosecutor and the sheriff obtained a video that was taken in the search after the five-day standoff. And what they described was, of course, the thoroughly wrecked and uninhabitable domicile, where there was digestive residue from dogs in the homestead, and supposedly there were rats and other vermin running around. And what the kids and their defense attorney pointed out is that these videos were taken after a five-day standoff where he had five young children, the oldest of whom I think was 15, five young children who had been living in poverty on account of their father's deteriorating situation. They had no adult supervision. They had no time, really, to conduct house cleaning. They were surrounded by armed strangers who had already hauled their mother off at gunpoint and started flinging lead at their dogs and, for all they knew it, their oldest brother. They had priorities other than dealing with defecating dogs and the problems attendant to sanitation that result. But this was used to poison the public mind against this family, as was the claim that they had 27 feral dogs that roamed their property and roamed the nearby neighborhood.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply describing the tragedy of this incident that occurred in the early 2001. But basically, of course, apparently the family is back together. William is going to go up to Sandpoint, Idaho, to look into it, to talk to them about this recent issue with Mrs. Hutchins, and certainly check on what happened. But unfortunately, sometimes you can have corruption within the structure of government, and it sounds like that's what they have within Sandpoint. For whatever reason, they wanted to get this woman's property, a very lush lakefront property, and
yes.
So they went to great lengths to conjure up a case so they could seize her property. But anyway, William, go right ahead from there.
Yeah, one of the things I want to point out is the collusion, of course, of the local press. And by local, we're referring to geographically local. It's not oriented toward the needs of the people who live there. It certainly doesn't reflect what happens in these little towns. But the Spokane newspaper, Spokesman Review, was a sounding board and a stenographer for the officials there on the ground in Sandpoint and in Bonner County. And the Spokane Spokesman Review was notorious for being a rip-and-read, republishing regurgitation outlet for the likes of the Southern Poverty Law Center. One one of their favorite themes is that Northern Idaho is irremediably racist, that it is the natural habitat of neo-Nazis and other disreputable people of that sort, of whom there may be a handful at any given time. There are probably fewer neo-Nazis in the wild in Northern Idaho than there are in most of the urban centers in places like Michigan and Illinois and so forth. And for that matter, most of the neo-Nazis, I would say rounded up to more than half, are in the employ of the federal government, which has been keeping that movement alive now for decades, from George Lincoln Rockwell all the way through Elohim City and the so-called National Socialist Movement, which was shot through with people who were on the payroll of the FBI.
Well, it's just like the Communist Party. It was financed, certainly, in fact, it was said, you know, that almost half the members of the Communist Party were government infiltrators who were being paid by the government, but basically to spy on the communists. You never knew when you were actually in a communist cell meeting who was certainly a government agent and who was a real communist. But basically, because the same sort of thing is going on increasingly in America, the FBI has literally tens of thousands of informants out there. In fact, your best friend could be an informant working for the government. We've repeatedly had agents try to infiltrate our little ministry here through the years, and maybe even trying to do it at the present time again. But go right ahead, William.
I don't think that it's an exaggeration to say that your friend could be an informant. That's not to say you should reflexively distrust your friend or your friends or your family, but it is worthwhile to point out that there is the biblical line about one's enemies being the members of his own household. And in the most recent Radio Liberty newsletter, I talk about the brother of Anwar al-Awlaki, who is, unlike his brother, unlike Anwar, his brother Aman is an individual who went into the oil industry. He was raised in Canada, and he became thoroughly westernized and secularized. And he ended up in Northern Africa and in the Emirates working in the oil industry, not particularly interested in the Islamic religion, unlike his brother Anwar, who went on to become subsequently of cleric and became very outspoken in his criticism of U.S. policy toward the Muslim world. He was considered in the immediate aftermath of 2001, the 9/11 attacks, as somebody who was a relative moderate, somebody who was pro-Western in his orientation. He was brought in for briefings at the Pentagon. He was brought in for briefings at the State Department, if memory serves. He was featured in the media as somebody who was a liaison to the Muslim world, and they were trying to cultivate him as an informant. There was an effort to catch him in what was called a honey trap way back in the early years of this millennium, and that involved putting him in compromising positions with young women married at the time. And this is a tactic which is used by every secret police organization, whether you're talking about the KGB or the Mossad or the FBI. They love to compromise people that way and use this as leverage in order to get them to be informants. Well, Anwar al-Awlaki did fight on that. He became critical of the Iraq War, the war in Afghanistan. He went back to Yemen, which is where his family is from, and he engaged in agitation and propaganda on behalf of what he called defensive jihad. I don't think that he was strictly scrupulous in terms of the defensive aspect of the jihad, but he was somebody who had been critical of terrorist attacks on civilians, whether you're talking about Muslims or Americans. But he was targeted by the FBI, targeted by the CIA. By 2006, 2007, 2008, he was somebody who was being looked upon as an enemy of the United States government. By 2009 or 2010, he was on a kill list, and he was brought in by the Yemeni government, acting on behalf of the Obama administration, imprisoned for about a year and a half. And in the course of his imprisonment, Anwar al-Awlaki was invited once again to become an asset on behalf of the U.S. government. When he refused, he was released. And there were at least five attempts made to kill him before the successful drone attack a couple of years ago.
But he had never been indicted.
No.
He had never been given a chance to defend himself. And you don't kill people because they disagree with government policy.
Yeah.
I mean, suddenly he was not engaged in any active sort of financing of terrorism, was he?
No, he wasn't. But there was a claim made after he was killed on the part of the underwear bomber that Anwar al-Awlaki had been deeply involved with al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is a threat to the Yemeni government, but not a threat to the United States. I hate to specify. It's not a good group. It's a terrorist organization that targets the pro-U.S. dictator of Yemen. It doesn't target American citizens. But this was an accusation made by somebody under duress who is himself accused of a crime, and the person that responded to those accusations is now dead and can't defend himself.
But the thing is that you do not certainly condemn somebody to death who is an American citizen without an indictment, without some proof. In fact, President Obama, within the last week, has said that certainly we are going to actually have a set up a secret court so that before we kill people, why, we can have a judge look at the evidence. Of course, we don't know what evidence is going to be presented. There'll be no defense. But even President Obama realizes that this frank murder, they murdered this man without an opportunity to defend himself in any way. Then they murdered his innocent 16-year-old son, already, because, as you point out so well in the newsletter, simply to let people understand that if you do something bad, we'll not only kill you, we'll kill your family. And even President Obama is saying that this is wrong and we're going to have some sort of a court. Ladies and gentlemen, there's no statute of limitations for murder. And whoever certainly signed off on the murder, not only of the father, but of the innocent 16-year-old son, is guilty of murder. Sounds to me like President Obama is a little concerned, don't you think?
I would certainly hope so. And I do know that his predecessor has not traveled abroad since he left the Oval Office. And on a couple of occasions, actually, he traveled to Canada once. He was almost served with papers.
You're talking about George W. Bush, because, of course, he should be cited for murder, too. He lied to the American people. Every one of our intelligence agencies said that Saddam Hussein did no longer had any weapons of mass destruction. Everybody knew they'd been transferred to Syria. That's where the chemical weapons in Syria came from Saddam Hussein. And yet George Bush, lying, intentionally went before the American people and said we had to attack Saddam Hussein. He had always intended to do that. Even Donald Rumsfeld had admitted that simply 5 days after the 9/11 attack, why President Bush had called him in and to talk about how we were going to justify going to war with Iran. That was back in 2001.
Yeah.
They wanted to go to war because the Bush family wanted to go to war because there's a lot of oil there. And basically, they then sent our troops in. We've killed 100,000, maybe a million Iraqis. We don't know. We know at least 6,000 Americans have been killed. Another 35,000 injured. Many of them lost their arm or a leg or are permanently crippled for that. And George W. Bush is responsible. And that's probably why he's not traveling very widely today. Because he's known as a criminal throughout the world. But we never mention that here in America. We wouldn't want to offend him, would we?
It's interesting how with the recent dedication of the George W. Bush Library, think about this for a second. This is a library that is dedicated to the name of a man who famously said he never read and whose administration produced a steady stream of redacted documents. It's just really an interesting conceptual oxymoron that there would be a library named after George W. Bush and his administration, but the dedication ceremony for this facility, mausoleum, really, he had the incumbent president, Bush's successor. He had his predecessors going back to his father and, of course, Jimmy Carter. All the living ex-presidents were there. Each one of them gave an address, but the Iraq War was never mentioned. It's something they wouldn't want to speak about. That's the event that dominated his presidency, and we're living in the lengthening shadows of that strategic error and that moral abomination. The thing about what Obama is doing with the drone strikes, as you point out, Dr. Stan, is he's actually enlarging upon the worst elements of the legacy he was bequeathed by his predecessor in terms of institutional lawlessness. And the murder of Anwar al-Awlaki and the compounding murder of a 16-year-old son are crimes for which, as you say, the statute of limitations will never expire. And what I find particularly perverse about the way that Anwar al-Awlaki was set up is that his father had been pursuing legal redress for a year and a half or so before the drone strike was conducted that murdered Mr. al-Awlaki. And he filed repeated injunctions, requests for injunctions that were batted away by the Obama administration, claiming that they had, through this spurious concept called the state secrets privilege, the authority to deny disclosure of whether there was an official kill list, let alone whether Mr. al-Awlaki was on it, and that his only potential recourse would be to surrender himself into the custody of a government that already announced that it intended to kill him. And while this is going on, just a few weeks before the drone strike that killed Awlaki, his brother, Amin, was in Vienna at a conference, an oil industry conference. He received a telephone call from a fellow who identified himself as a friend of his family, or actually said that his wife was a friend of Amin al-Awlaki's wife, and that he had a gift for her if he could meet him in the lobby. He went down to the hotel lobby, and he ran into a man who identified himself by a sobriquet, and he was obviously a CIA official. And he told Amin al-Awlaki that the government of the United States was closing in on his brother, and they intended to kill him, but he enlisted him for the supposed purpose of helping them to find him so he could be taken into custody. And among the things that this repulsive human being told Amin al-Awlaki was that there was a $5 million bounty on his brother's head so he wouldn't be helping them for free. He was inviting this man to sell out his brother to the CIA for $5 million. The CIA, of course, is many, many loathsome things. It's really difficult to think of an area of applied human loathsomeness in which the CIA is not actively involved, if not the dominant element, from drug trafficking to all kinds of vice to murder and subversion. There are many, many loathsome things. One of the things that they do, perhaps better, if better applies in this context than any similarly situated group in human history, is flesh peddling. They brought into custody, they received into custody, hundreds of people who were collected by Pakistani bounty hunters immediately after the Afghan war began in 2001, and most of those people ended up in Gitmo. And most of the remaining people in Gitmo today are people who are simply collected by bounty hunters and sold to the CIA. So what they were asking this guy to do was to sell out his brother for the promise, most likely one that would not be fulfilled, of $5 million. And he must have known that they had no intention of bringing his brother in alive, because he made, I'm guessing, a rather anatomically explicit suggestion as to where the CIA officer could insert that suggestion. But what kind of a government is it that would try to bribe a brother to turn in his brother so that he could be killed? And then failing that, they kill the target, and then they kill that man's son in order to send the message to that family that you dare not defy the regime. I mean, we've reached a point now where that is what they're doing in terms of the applied lessons they're teaching. Think of what happened just a week ago to this fellow down in Orlando, Florida, Ibrahim Todashev, 27-year-old acquaintance of Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the most likely CIA-recruited terrorist who was involved in the Boston Marathon bombing. This guy was straight up executed by the FBI. And the story that emerged was that he supposedly attacked an FBI agent with a knife as he was about to confess to involvement in a triple murder. Once again, we will never know if there's any truth to this. His friends swear that he never intended to confess anything to the FBI because he was an innocent man. But we find out...
apparently it's come out that he didn't even have a knife. And no. It's sort of like, ladies and gentlemen, they're lying to us. You remember the story about the younger brother who certainly was apprehended
exactly.
After he tried to commit suicide by shooting himself, but he didn't have a gun.
Yeah.
So basically then, why can't he talk? Well, apparently somebody, after they got him, slit his throat. Then, of course, we're told that he confessed. He wrote on the inside of the boat where he was that all his confession about how he and his brother were involved in this. And now we hear that he's asking, why am I being held? And why did you kill my brother? We had nothing to do with that. So are we to believe that he wrote a confession and then now he's denying this whole thing? Or is everything we're being told a lie? And I would like to suggest, ladies and gentlemen, everything you're being told by the media is a lie. But I don't want to get into a discussion of the Boston Marathon. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah.
But I do know that most of what I remember that very evening, watching Rock Center, Brian Williams' program. And on the screen, they showed basically the gun battle going on between the two brothers and our police officers. And there were hundreds of shots fired from either side. And then it turned out that the brothers only had one gun with limited ammunition and one gun and one knife between them. And basically what they showed on Rock Center was all a lie. There weren't hundreds of shots that the boys fired at all. They only had one gun. most of what you get is what they want you to get and believe. William, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how to get to your website, how to get to your certain articles, and how to get to your PayPal button.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. My chief outlet is the Pro Libertate blog. Just go to Google or a similar search and type in Pro Libertate and Grig. That will take you directly to my blog. The direct web address is Freedom in Our Time, one word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. I've been updating it about once a week with a brand new essay of roughly 2,000 words. As you mentioned, Dr. Stan, there's a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay. I am deeply grateful to you, Dr. Stan, and to everybody who has been very generous helping to underwrite my work and to keep my family afloat, quite frankly. This is my main means of supporting our family. I also publish quite frequently at lewrockwell.com, lewrockwell.com. And there's a blog there as well as the essays that are republished every so often. And my radio program is at libertyroundtable.com, Liberty News Radio Network, libertyroundtable.com. It's called Freedom Zealot Radio and is on every Saturday night at, I believe, 8 o'clock Mountain Time.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program with William Grigg. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Dr. Stan, thank you once again for this opportunity. It's always a blessing and a privilege to be with you, and I deeply appreciate your kindness and that of your wife to me and to my family and all the things that you have done over these many decades for truth and liberty. Just by way of rounding out the discussion of what happened to this Ibrahim Todishev, 27-year-old man who was supposedly seized upon by an irrational impulse that led him to pull a knife on an FBI agent as he was about to confess to involvement in the triple murder, except it wasn't a knife, it was supposedly a metal pole, an unnamed government official is reciting that story now. The thing is, if you take a look at the postmortem photos that were presented by his father in a Moscow press conference just, I believe, yesterday, there was a bullet wound on the top of his head. That's a mafia-style kill shot. That's not the sort of thing that would happen if you're talking about defensive force being used by somebody who's fending off a crazed attacker holding a knife or holding a metal pole. And I think that a big, bad FBI agent who's one of several people on the scene, including state police from Massachusetts and Orlando City Police, I think they'd be able to subdue a single 27-year-old guy armed with a pole, a metal pole of some kind. That's not a lethal weapon when you're talking about people who are bristling with firearms. But this incident, as you say, Dr. Stan, and what we have seen in terms of the media manipulation of what happened in the aftermath of the Boston Marathon bombing, really throw into sharp relief the fact that we are living in a soft totalitarian state with a state-controlled media that is not in any way interested in letting us be exposed to the truth. They're trying to limit our exposure to those things that play well with the themes that those who presume to rule us want us to believe, those things that they have ordained in terms of how we're going to manage our lives or how they will manage their lives on our behalf. And things are only going to grow worse in crescendo. Of course, we've seen how the Obama administration is using every regulatory agency in its control, including the most fearsome one in existence, the IRS, to retaliate against its political enemies. This is just the beginning of sorrows. Things are going to get worse, and it's going to happen at every level of this monstrosity that we call the government ruling us. And that's one of the reasons why I like to say we have to kneel down and gather strength, and we have to stand on our knees and confront our enemies without fear or without hesitation, because we're living in times where we're going to find out what we're really made out of.
I agree with you. We're moving into very, very difficult times. And basically, of course, it's up to the people out there in the listening audience to be willing to get informed and then to help us inform others. William, thank you for everything you do. And certainly we'll look forward to talking to you again next week at the same time.
Thank you so much. God bless you, Doctor.
Good night. God bless. We'll be back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly if you have any question at all on what really happened, certainly in the Boston Marathon, you really have to go back and ask yourself, what really happened when they killed Jack Kennedy. Because if they killed Jack Kennedy and got away with it, why, this is a prototype for everything that's happened since then. We have certainly a four-tape set on JFK where you'll actually hear a certain interview with a doctor who's in the emergency room when they brought certainly the President Kennedy in the emergency room at Parkland Hospital, and he was warned and threatened never to tell the truth. Well, you'd hear my interview with Dr. Crenshaw, a two-hour interview with Fletcher Prouty, a colonel who is the CIA, pardon me, the government, the Defense Department liaison to the CIA, and suddenly an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald, which you'll never hear. Then, of course, we have another JFK update where you'll hear my two-hour interview with Madeleine Duncan Brown. And Madeleine Duncan Brown was certainly Lyndon Johnson's mistress, and she tells the story about the meeting the night before and who was at the meeting when they planned of the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And basically, you need to get this information. It's available. We have a DVD on the murder of JFK put together by our good friend Bob Fletcher. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. I would like to suggest that they've used these same techniques over and over and over again. And most of what you think you know is just not true. Basically, of course, we're told that Lee Harvey Oswald killed John Kennedy, and then he was immediately killed by a man named Jack Ruby. Why did Jack Ruby kill Lee Harvey Oswald? Have you ever asked yourself? Well, basically because he was told, and if you want to read the book, we don't carry it, but it's Double Cross by Chuck Giancano, the brother of Sam Giancano, who headed the mafia, who was working with the CIA. And the book is called Double Cross because the CIA ended up killing Sam Giancano, but Sam Giancano ordered Jack Ruby to kill, according to Sam's brother, Jack Ruby to kill Lee Harvey Oswald, or he and his whole wife family would be tortured to death. That was the option. That's why Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald, so that he and his family would not be tortured to death. And then, of course, that Jack Ruby was eventually quite willing to tell the Warren Commission exactly what happened. He immediately dies of fulminating cancer within a week or so. After telling that he's going to tell her the truth, he suddenly dies of cancer. And if you believe that, you believe anything. Ladies and gentlemen, we live in a wicked and fallen world. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand the powerful spiritual forces behind everything going on. If you want to know what happened on September 11th, we have certainly four CD sets on 9/11, 9/11 update. Why did the buildings come down? Well, we actually talked to a gentleman, Sergeant Leo Chavez, who was at CENTCOM headquarters that morning of the attack on the World Trade Center. And this young man disappeared shortly after he gave that interview. My knowledge, he's never been seen since then. What am I saying? I'm just saying I don't know what happened to him, and neither does anybody else, Sergeant Leo Chavez. All of these items are available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now, I should simply mention that if you're in a position to help Radio Liberty maintain our network of 50 outlets, 50 stations across America, we'd love to hear from you, because a lot of our listeners are having real problems, and some of them have had to cut back the support after 10 or 15 years. So if you could step into their place, we'd appreciate hearing from you. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. You need carry. You can get our health products. You can get our books and DVDs. You can get the books. You can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and get our tapes of the month, our CDs of the month. But please, if you're not able to afford to help us, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until Monday at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
Show. Yes, it is 31 May. We are live for the first hour today at Power Hour. Going to be heading up to the Sheriff's Seminar today, but we'll be live for this first hour. Got to give you the news. There's so much. If I had, I was thinking about this during the night. If I had left this news untold, I mean, there's always pieces to the puzzle that we need to learn, always things that we need to hear about what's going on so we can figure out what the next move is going to be. Well, today is one of those days. You look at the news and you think to yourself, I see exactly where this is going. How many times have you done that? I know where this story is going. Oh, my goodness. Well, we've got a lot of those. I know where this story is going. So, war and more war. New introductions of war and old wars that are going to be ginned up. That's right. When the United Nations says, you know, this war could get worse, what's the interpretation, Power Hour listeners? Obviously, it is going to get worse. So those people who still have that toxic Chinese ring in their